Okay, let's pray and we'll get started. Dear God, we thank you for this day. We thank you for who you are. We are thankful also for what we have here recounted in Exodus to remind us what you have done in bringing your people out of bondage, which also makes us think about what you have done for us as believers as well. Pray that you would be helping us as we look at this section here, that you would open our eyes and help us to understand more about you. I pray this in Jesus' name. Amen. Okay, so we are in our study of Exodus, and so I thought we would briefly go over the outline. This is mostly what we have in the back of our Sunday school book. I made one modification. For what I thought was logical reasons, went and moved the institution of the law into the section on worship. But other than that, we have two main sections. We have history at the beginning, so the first 18 chapters, and then the second half of the book, 19 through 40, is dealing with worship. So in the first four chapters, we have the people being brought, are in bondage, which is kind of the problem of the book. And then we have this contest with Pharaoh, which is partly what we'll be looking at today. That is to bring the people out of bondage. And then 11 through 15 is the actual exodus from Egypt, so them leaving Egypt. And then we have 16 through 18, which is some of the days of travel, and more of the travel is recounted in other books of the Pentateuch. Then we have this section on worship, so we have the institution of the law in 19 through 24. And then 25 through 31 deals with the tabernacle and how that is revealed. And then kind of between these two sections on the tabernacle, interestingly, is the section about the gold calf. And so that's kind of in contrast to the other parts that are happening here. And then in 35 through 40, we actually have the tabernacle constructed, and that's how the book ends. So before we get into things today, I kind of wanted to look at the plagues as a whole, and I was kind of interested in studying to see some of the things that are going on here. So you may have heard that some people refer to there being three cycles of three plagues and then the final plague, but as I was looking at this, I kind of got to wondering about there being two cycles of five. So in favor of having cycles of three, notice that we have mourning referred to in the first set of three, and that happens consistently. Also, we have a little bit of a pattern here with references to stretch out your staff or stretch out your hand. That happens in the first three, and then it doesn't happen for the next three, and then it happens for the 7, 8, and 9 as well. So that's kind of setting off segments of three as well. In addition, we have the command to Pharaoh of letting Israel go, and that appears in the first two of each set. So notice that as well. So those are kind of things that would indicate cycles of three. But on the side of cycles of five, notice that the fifth plague and the tenth plague both deal with death. So we have the death of the animals and we have the death of the firstborn. So I think that's kind of significant. Also notice that the center of each of the, if we're looking at cycles of five, the center one has gnats and locusts, which are kind of similar in that. And then finally, notice that for the first five plagues, it explicitly says that Pharaoh is the one hardening his heart. However, in the last five, except one exception, it's almost exclusively the Lord that is hardening Pharaoh's heart. So that kind of would be something on that side. So a couple other things to just be noticing that I was trying to see across the plagues. We do have some of the plagues are attempted to be imitated by the magicians, so they are successfully doing that twice. They fail on the third time, and then we hear of no more attempts by them. There are various requests for relief, which kind of picks up more towards the end of the plagues. another thing throughout the plagues, because so God is told he's going to release his people, but that seemingly gets delayed and delayed. And so kind of interjected in here, which I think is important, are statements about this is what the Lord said. And so that's actually, I think, meant to be a comfort to the people and to those who are actually reading this as well. So we also know that the Israelites are explicitly spared from five of the plagues. And so I have highlighted those as well. Half of the plagues come after a warning is given, and some of the plagues obviously come with no warning. So that's something to note as we will be going through these plagues. And then finally, Pharaoh offers permissions for various parts of the Israelites to leave. We'll see one of those today. And then finally, with the 10th plague, like all restrictions are removed on the people. Another thing that I noticed in studying and was actually pointed out in commentaries as well is there is actually a structure to the plague, so be noticing that. So first it says God tells them what's going to happen. Then we have the account of what happened, and all the plagues actually have some sort of symbolic act that is done, like stretching out your hand, throwing soot in the air. So there's something like that with each of the plagues. And then finally, it also says what happened, and so the results. So there's kind of this structure that we'll see in each of these plagues. Okay, so for what we'll be looking at today, we have God telling Moses and Aaron in the first seven verses of chapter 7, kind of a summary of what the plan is and how Pharaoh is going to be reacting to that and what God's going to do. Then in 7 verses 8 through 13, we have kind of an introductory miracle, although I've seen some people kind of referring to all of these as a set of 11 miracles that are happening. Then the rest of chapter 7, so 14 through 25, is the first plague, so water being turned into blood. Then in chapter 8, we have three plagues. So the first one in 1 through 15 is the plague of frogs. Then in 16 through 19, we have the gnats. And then in 20 through 32, we have swarms of flies. Okay, let's go ahead and I will read these chapters. Then the Lord said to Moses, "See, I make you as God to Pharaoh, and your brother Aaron shall be your prophet. And you shall speak all that I command you, and your brother Aaron shall speak to Pharaoh, that he let the sons of Israel go out of the land. But I will harden Pharaoh's heart, that I may multiply my signs and my wonders in the land of Egypt. When Pharaoh does not listen to you, then I will lay my hand on Egypt and bring out my hosts, my people, the sons of Israel, from the land of Egypt by great judgments. The Egyptians shall know that I am the Lord when I stretch out my hand on Egypt and bring out the sons of Israel from their midst." So Moses and Aaron did it, and the Lord, as the Lord commanded them, thus they did. Moses was 80 years old and Aaron 83 when they spoke to Pharaoh. Now the Lord said to Moses and Aaron, saying, "When Pharaoh speaks to you, saying, 'Work a miracle,' then you shall say to Aaron, 'Take your staff and throw it down before Pharaoh, that it may become a serpent.'" So Moses and Aaron came to Pharaoh, and thus they did, just as the Lord had commanded. And Aaron threw his staff down before Pharaoh and his servants, and it became a serpent. Then Pharaoh also called for the wise men and the sorcerers, and they also, the magicians of Egypt, did the same with their secret arts. For each one threw down his staff, and they turned into serpents. But Aaron's staff swallowed up their staffs. Then, yet Pharaoh's heart was hardened, and he did not listen to them as the Lord had said. Then the Lord said to Moses, "Pharaoh's heart is stubborn. He refuses to let the people go. Go to Pharaoh in the morning as he is going out to the water, and station yourself to meet him on the bank of the Nile. And you shall take in your hand the staff that was turned into a serpent. You shall say to him, 'The Lord, the God of the Hebrews, sent me to you, saying, "Let my people go, that they may serve me in the wilderness. But behold, you have not listened until now. Thus says the Lord, by this you shall know that I am the Lord. Behold, I will strike the water that is in the Nile with the staff that is in my hand, and it will be turned to blood. The fish that are in the Nile will die, and the Nile will become foul, and the Egyptians will find difficulty in drinking water from the Nile." Then the Lord said to Moses, Say to Aaron, take your staff and stretch out your hand over the waters of Egypt, over the rivers, over their streams, over their pools, and over all the reservoirs of water, that they may become blood. And there will be blood throughout the land of Egypt, both in vessels of wood and in vessels of stone. So Moses and Aaron did even as the Lord had commanded. And he lifted up the staff and struck the water that was in the Nile in the sight of Pharaoh and in the sight of his servants, and all the water that was in the Nile was turned to blood. The fish that were in the Nile died, and the Nile became foul, so the Egyptians could not drink the water from the Nile. And the blood was through all the land of Egypt. But the magicians of Egypt did the same with their secret arts, and Pharaoh's heart was hardened, and he did not listen to them as the Lord had said. Then Pharaoh turned and went into his house with no concern even for this. So all the Egyptians dug around the Nile for water to drink, for they could not drink the water of the Nile. 7 days passed after the Lord had struck the Nile. Then the Lord said to Moses, go to Pharaoh and say to him, thus says the Lord, let my people go that they may serve me. But if you refuse to let them go, behold, I will smite your whole territory with frogs. The Nile will swarm with frogs, which will come up and go into your house and into your bedroom and on your bed and into the houses of your servants and on your people and into your ovens and into your kneading bowls. So the frogs will come up on you and your people and all your servants. Then the Lord said to Pharaoh, said to Moses, say to Aaron, stretch out your hand with your staff over the rivers, over the streams, and over the pools, and make frogs come up on the land of Egypt. So Aaron stretched out his hand over the waters of Egypt, and the frogs came up and covered the land of Egypt. The magicians did the same with their secret arts, making frogs come up on the land of Egypt. Then Pharaoh called for Moses and Aaron and said, entreat the Lord that he remove the frogs from me and from my people, and I will let the people go that they may sacrifice to the Lord. Moses said to Pharaoh, the honor is yours to tell me, when shall I entreat for you and your servants and your people that the frogs be destroyed from you and your houses, that they may be left only in the Nile? Then he said, tomorrow. So he said, may it be according to your word, that you may know that there is no one like the Lord our God. The frogs will depart from you and your houses and your servants and your people. They will be left only in the Nile. Then Moses and Aaron went out from Pharaoh, and Moses cried to the Lord concerning the frogs which he had inflicted upon Pharaoh. The Lord did according to the word of Moses, and the frogs died out of the houses, the courts, and the fields. So they piled them in heaps, and the land became foul. But when Pharaoh saw that there was relief, he hardened his heart and did not listen to them as the Lord had said. Then the Lord said to Moses, say to Aaron, stretch out your staff and strike the dust of the earth, that it may become gnats throughout the land of Egypt. They did so, and Aaron stretched out his hand with his staff and struck the dust of the earth, and there were gnats on man and beast. All the dust of the earth became gnats throughout the land of Egypt. The magicians tried with their secret arts to bring forth gnats, but they could not, so there were gnats on man and beast. Then the magician said to Pharaoh, this is the finger of God, but Pharaoh's heart was hardened, and he did not listen to them as the Lord had said. Now the Lord said to Moses, rise early in the morning and present yourself before Pharaoh as he comes out to the water, and say to him, thus says the Lord, let my people go that they may serve me. For if you do not let my people go, behold, I will send swarms of insects on you and on your servants and on your people, and into your houses, and the houses of the Egyptians will be full of swarms of insects, and also the ground on which they dwell. But on that day I will set apart the land of Goshen, where my people are living, so that no swarms of insects will be there, in order that you may know that I, the Lord, am in the midst of the land. I will put a division between my people and your people. Tomorrow this sign will occur. Then the Lord did so. And there came great swarms of insects into the houses of Pharaoh and the houses of his servants, and the land was laid waste because of the swarms of insects in the land of Egypt. Pharaoh called for Moses and Aaron and said, go sacrifice to your God within the land. But Moses said, it is not right to do so, for we will sacrifice to the Lord our God what is an abomination to the Egyptians. If we sacrifice what is an abomination to the Egyptians before their eyes, Will they not stone us? We must go 3 days' journey into the wilderness and sacrifice to the Lord our God as he commands us. Pharaoh said, I will let you go that you may sacrifice to the Lord your God in the wilderness, only you shall not go very far away. Make supplication for me. Then Moses said, Behold, I am going out from you, and I shall make supplication to the Lord that the swarms of insects may depart from Pharaoh, from his servants, and from his people tomorrow. Only do not let Pharaoh deal deceitfully again in not letting the people go to sacrifice to the Lord. So Moses went out from Pharaoh and made supplication to the Lord. The Lord did as Moses asked and removed the swarms of insects from Pharaoh, from his servants, and from his people. Not one remained. But Pharaoh hardened his heart this time also, and he did not let the people go. Okay, so let's just remember where we're at in Exodus so far. So the people are in bondage. God has called Moses to come to bring about the rescue of his people. And what we had previously was in chapter 5, the labor of the people was increased. And then we had kind of the account in chapter 6, had a little bit of the genealogy of Moses and Aaron, but also we kind of have the setup for what we have here as far as God sending Moses and Aaron to Pharaoh, and then we have what we have here. So what we have starting here is this first section about kind of this summary. And so we have the Lord saying to Moses that they are, well, Moses is being made as God to Pharaoh, and that Aaron will be like a prophet. So Pharaoh is a title, and we've had that previously, even as far back as Genesis 12. And so this is something as a position that's been around for a while. And so Aaron and Moses are going to have this special position as intermediaries. And Aaron specifically is going to be as Moses' prophet. The first person referred to as a prophet in the Bible was actually Abraham back in Genesis 20. So God would speak to Moses, and then Moses would relay that to Aaron, who would then speak to Pharaoh. Also, interestingly, we have Moses, or Pharaoh, kind of on the opposite direction, coming to Moses to entreat God on his behalf. So it's kind of a two-way thing as well, as far as them being intermediaries between God and Pharaoh. Okay, so then we are told in verse 2 that they are to speak everything that God commands them. And so being representatives for God, they need to be faithful in transmitting that to Pharaoh. So Moses is to faithfully transmit to Aaron, and then Aaron is to do the same as he gives the message to Pharaoh. This kind of double intermediary is kind of a little bit unique here. God is usually speaking through one person to another group of people. So the main message that we have, though, is that Pharaoh is to let the people go. And you may have noticed that that's repeated a number of times in this section and kind of up to the point when they are actually let go. It does say here in verse 2, notice that it does indicate that the land is Pharaoh's, like that is legitimate, and God has kind of parceled out lands to various nations. But these people were not Pharaoh's people, and so that's really what the distinction is. The land is Pharaoh's, the people of Israel are not Pharaoh's. They are going to have their own land provided to them by God. So the previous verses really have been focusing on Moses and Aaron and what they are to do. But as we get to verse 3, we have God saying what he is doing in this. So really is emphasizing that God is going to do this. He says, but I will harden Pharaoh's heart. And so this word harden here is technically a causative, so it's to make hard or heavy. And it's actually also used in the expression for somebody to become stiff-necked. So that was kind of interesting. Throughout this section, we actually have, there's three different words that are used for hardening. We have the one here, which we've talked about, to make hard or heavy. There is the main one, though, that is used, so we'll see this in when we get down to 7:13 or 7:22. And this is for the mind or heart to be hardened. This is kind of the main one that's used, and it's actually used all the way up through chapter 14 as well, as they are, the Egyptians are going out to be destroyed ultimately in the Dead Sea, or the Red Sea. Then there is another one that is used in 7:14, which is to be dull or hard. But we have all these things that are kind of re-emphasized throughout the section. So God is going to make Pharaoh's heart hard, and we also have Pharaoh doing that throughout here as well. So the heart is the inner self, so this is the seat of feeling or impulses, and that is relating to Pharaoh and him not wanting to let the people know. So he has that desire in his heart. And as far as Pharaoh hardening his heart versus God hardening his heart, it's actually kind of a mix of these. And one thing I was reading was saying that there's actually 10 of each. So there's 10 times Pharaoh hardens his heart, and there's 10 times that God actually is working in that as well. Okay, so God is going to harden his heart, but there is a purpose in this, and that is that God will be able to multiply his signs and wonders in the land of Egypt. And so God wouldn't be able to do this in quite the same way if Pharaoh's heart wasn't hardened, and so this is actually all part of God's plan. And so you may have heard before about people displaying diamonds on black velvet, and so that's kind of similar here. God is making things more difficult to make his glory appear even greater through this. Okay, so then we have the verse 4 talking about how when Pharaoh doesn't listen, what he is going to do here. So listen doesn't just mean to hear. Most of the time in the Bible, to listen means to actually understand and actually do something. And so when Pharaoh is being told these things, it's not just that it's supposed to bounce off his ears. It is actually supposed to bring about a change in his actions, which obviously is not what is happening. So here we're kind of switching back a little bit to looking at Moses and Aaron, that God is going to be doing these things and bring about great judgments, but it says when Pharaoh doesn't listen to you. So again, this is being done by God, but he is using Moses and Aaron in this. So we have another purpose given here when God is bringing this about, and that is that he's going to be judging the land of Egypt. It talks about he's going to bring his people out of Egypt by great judgments. And so this is, again, why God is hardening Pharaoh in this. There's a couple different references to God's people. There's three of them that really are referring to the same thing. So God refers to his people as my hosts, which can also be translated as army. Also my people, and then he also refers to them as the sons of Israel. And so some of this really is very similar to verse 3 and kind of describing the same things, that judgment of Egypt is the means by which God is going to bring his people out. And so there's both going to be wonders and judgments as God is doing this. Then in verse 5, we really see a result from this, which is that the Egyptians will know that I am the Lord. And so this is kind of a big focus as well through these plagues, that when God brings the plagues, when God removes the plagues, when God warns about these things, this is that the Egyptians may know who God is. You may remember when we were going through Ezekiel, how knowledge of God was a big emphasis there. And really it's kind of a significant emphasis here as well. God is known by his actions and also by his words. And we really have both of those happening, quite frequently throughout the book of Exodus. And so even God's hand of judgment is meant to be teaching, which is the point that's really being made here. Then in verse 6, we are kind of reminded of Moses and Aaron's obedience in all of this. Notice that we have the word did mentioned both at the beginning of the verse. So Moses and Aaron did it. And then at the end of the verse as well, thus they did. So that's really emphasizing that they did this. But then notice in the middle what they did, and that was as the Lord commanded them. And so that is the focus, and then also emphasizing the fact that they were faithful in accomplishing this. And then to close this section, we're just told about Moses and Aaron's age. You may have heard that Moses' life can kind of be divided up into sets of 40. So his first 40 growing up in Egypt, his next 40 in Midian, and then the 40 years where he is being used by God to bring the people out of Egypt. Also, one of the commentators was pointing out that his age here may actually be something else that is being used to emphasize God's power, in that we have an older man being the one that is used to bring the people out of Israel, therefore not by his power, but by God's power through him. Okay, so moving into verse 8, we have kind of this introductory miracle here. And notice that kind of throughout all this, we have God actually speaking a lot. So we have kind of direct speech from him, or speech that is being reported as from God by Moses. So we have the Lord speaking, and he tells them beforehand that Pharaoh is going to ask them to work a miracle. And so God is providing for his people in letting them know beforehand what is going to happen. And this is something that is being asked of Moses and Aaron. So the you here is actually plural. And this is something that Pharaoh would be commanding them. So God had already said he was going to be doing this and working miracles, but this is something that Pharaoh is actually kind of initiating here. And in some sense, Pharaoh kind of placing himself in the place of God. So Pharaoh is wanting proof before he would release the Israelites to show that, I guess, that their God was powerful enough and he should listen to the Lord's demands. So this miracle is to be worked by the staff, and it's to be thrown down, and it will become a serpent. And so this is something that Moses has done before when he came to the people, when he came back to Egypt, and this was a sign that the Lord had provided, and so that is to be used here again as well. This word for snake here is a little bit different than what is used later, and this is the same word that's used in Genesis 1:21, which can mean a sea monster or a sea dragon, but in this same section here, it's also the normal word for snake is used as well. Okay, so that was kind of telling us what's going to happen. So we kind of move into verse 10 where we actually have things happening. And so they come to Pharaoh and they do as the Lord had told them. So Pharaoh obviously has commanded this miracle, and they go ahead and do that, and the staff becomes a snake. And again, as it's telling us, it's really emphasizing how Moses and Aaron are being faithful to do what the Lord has commanded. Notice also that this isn't done purely for Pharaoh's benefit. It's also done for in front of his servants as well. Pharaoh and his servants are actually mentioned quite a bit together in this section. So then Pharaoh tries to get out of any obligation that he might have by having to be convinced by this miracle. And so he calls various groups of people to him. So he calls the sorcerers, which is the first time this is mentioned. We have some of these other groups mentioned back in Genesis 41, but not this one. So the wise men were mentioned previously in Genesis 41, and the magicians as well. So remember, Satan is a counterfeiter, and so we're seeing some of that here, where the miracles that God did is able to be counterfeited by the work of Satan. So really, in doing this, though, Pharaoh is looking for any reason that he can to not be listening to what God is telling him, and really he's just wanting to be seeking his own way. So they go ahead and do this, and they throw down their staffs, and they all become serpents. And so purely by number, this would seem to be more impressive, because many snakes would be more impressive than one. But as we see in the next verse, they're really powerless in this, because the one snake then goes ahead and swallows up all the other ones. So Pharaoh was probably thinking that he had won, but this is kind of proved to be false. But ultimately, that doesn't really matter to Pharaoh. He is going to go ahead and do what he wants, so he is going to ignore what has happened here. But notice then at the end that we have the confirmation that this is all as the Lord had said. And so this is not to be a surprise either to Moses and Aaron as this is happening, or to us, because God foretold this beforehand. Okay, so now we move into the first plague, so turning the water into blood. And notice how this is really connected to what has just happened. So verse 13 talked about Pharaoh's hardened heart, and that's what 14 picks up with as well. And so this is directly connected to Pharaoh's response to that, and that is the result of God bringing this plague as well. So Pharaoh's refusing to let the people go is merely a symptom of Pharaoh's rebellion against God. So in 15, God tells Moses what he is to do, and he is to go out in the morning to meet Pharaoh. And it's possible that, as Pharaoh seems to do this periodically, that this might be connected with a religious exercise. Some think that as nobility, they had a right to take a bath more frequently, like it wasn't as common in the past, and so maybe that's what he's doing as well. But he is to go out to meet him, and apparently the place was known. And remember, Moses did grow up in Pharaoh's court, and so he would be familiar with some of these things. And he is told that he is to take the staff with him, and so this is also tied back to what previously just happened. And so that is to be there and kind of be a reminder to Pharaoh that he should remember what he has just seen as well. Then in verse 16, so we had not only what Moses is to do, but here we have what Moses is to say. And again, really in response to Pharaoh's hard heart. And he is to tell him, "The Lord, the God of the Hebrews, sent me to you saying, let my people go." And so this is something that is repeated very often. And notice that Moses has been sent. And so he is just the messenger, and so he is relaying really a message from God, and Pharaoh needs to listen to it as a message to God. This call to have Pharaoh let the people go is repeated 6 times throughout these plagues, and I think we actually have it a couple times kind of leading up to it as God is telling Moses what he is going to be doing as well. And notice that there is a purpose in this, that they are to be let go that they may serve God. And so the action of letting them go really can't be separated from the purpose of that. So when Pharaoh refuses to do these things, it's not really about defying Moses and Aaron in this, but it's really defying God is really what Pharaoh is doing. Then at the end of the verse, I think we have interesting kind of tone here. It says, "But behold, you have not listened until now." And so I think there's a little bit of a ominous feeling here about this, and there will be a time when Pharaoh will be forced to listen. Okay, notice as we continue that this also is going to be something that will let Pharaoh know that God is Lord, he is Yahweh, and that is given in relation to the plague here. So notice that it doesn't say, by this you will know that I am God, but it says, by this you will know that I am Yahweh. So this sign really is to authenticate who the Lord is, and it's not merely for judgment, even though that is connected to it as well. So first, we had the staff turned into something else, and now the staff is going to be used to turn the Nile into something else as well. And in some ways, this is a little bit similar to Jesus turning water into wine, although here this is kind of a destructive thing, where what Jesus did was beneficial. Also, for Egypt, the Nile was kind of a big thing for them. That was kind of a source of life, helped transport, helped them with their agriculture. And so this is kind of a big start to the plagues in kind of attacking directly this thing in their land that was so important to them. Notice then in verse 18, there's three consequences of the Nile turning into blood. And notice how the Nile is mentioned in connection with each of those in those phrases. So the fish that are in the Nile will die, the Nile will become foul, and the Egyptians will find difficulty in drinking water from the Nile. And so it's really emphasizing this attack on the Nile through this plague. So as we continue, I'll kind of get a little bit of an expansion in verse 19. So it's not just the Nile. That was kind of symbolic. But it's really going to be all the waters of Egypt. So there's a diversity of items mentioned here, which is meant to show us that nothing is going to be left out of this. So there's five different bodies of water that are mentioned, and also even water that's stored in jars and containers is going to be changed as well. So we see, continuing, that both Moses and Aaron have things that they are to be doing in this. And as this miracle is performed, notice that it says that it's done in the sight of Pharaoh and in the sight of his servants. And so, again, they're kind of connected here. And then notice also in this verse, so verse 20, that it says all the water that is in the Nile was turned to blood. And so, again, we have the completeness and kind of this broad extent of this miracle happening. Then we kind of get into verse 21, so this is kind of after the fact, and so we have the results which have been predicted are now showed as a fulfillment. And so the fish died, the Nile was foul, and they couldn't drink the water from the Nile, so that's just as had been told. And so this would seem, again, kind of like the kind of introductory miracle, that this was a great victory, but as we continue, we see that, again, Pharaoh calls for his magicians and has them do the same thing. It says that they do it by their secret arts or secrecy or sorcery, which is mentioned a couple times in chapter 8 as well. So in this, though, there's kind of a folly in Pharaoh and his magicians in doing this, because if they had the power to replicate it, why didn't they have the power to reverse it, which would have shown kind of, in some sense, a greater power in doing that, but that's not what they do. And really, this is just only helping to harden Pharaoh's heart more. Obviously, Pharaoh helped in hardening his own heart as well. And really, there's actually quite a bit that's said about Pharaoh and his heart all the way up until the Red Sea. So after this happens, we see in verse 23 that Pharaoh is really unconcerned about this. He doesn't take this as a serious disaster. His people could replicate it, so it's not a big deal. So he goes ahead and returns to his house. It seems from what we see in verse 24 that only the surface of the water was affected, not just the surface of a stream, but meaning that the groundwater wasn't contaminated. And so the people dig to try and get to water. Notice that they don't appeal to God here. So really they're trying to seek their own help by their own efforts here. And so that's probably not what they should be doing. They should have been asking God for help to reverse this plague. Okay, finally, last verse of the chapter. Notice that although this was accomplished through Moses and Aaron, It actually is attributed to the Lord. And so that, I think, is important to remember as we see these plagues, that they may be carried out through humans, but the power and the bringing about of them is from the Lord. And then the very last part of the verse about the 7 days, or I guess the whole verse is kind of short, is, I think, probably related to kind of introducing the next section. It's a little bit unclear about whether the 7 days here is talking about the amount of time that this first plague lasted, so whether it's a duration or whether this is an interval, saying the time between the first and the second plague. Okay, so as we move into chapter 8, we get to the second plague here. And so as a result, we have Moses being sent to Pharaoh again, and he has the same message, which is to let the people go. And again, they're not to be let go for no reason. They are to be let go to serve the Lord. And so this is a command from God to Pharaoh through Moses. This plague actually comes with a warning. And so it appears that Pharaoh could have changed his mind and let the people go before the effects of this plague came. And this happens with several of the other plagues as well. God really doesn't need to be telling him what the consequences are. And so I think even in this, we see some of God's grace to Pharaoh. We have an emphasis here on God being the one to do this. So notice the word I. He's really emphasizing that he is the one who's doing this, and he's going to be really revealing himself through this. I was reading some of Pastor Eldie Custis's notes on this, and he had an interesting thing that he said, when we close our hearts to what God says, his voice gets louder. And we kind of have a little bit of a progression of the impact of these plagues as we go through them. So in verse 3, we have a little bit more of a detailed explanation of what is happening. The previous verse just said frogs, but we see kind of more of the extent of that. So we have these first two plagues really focusing on things related to the Nile. One kind of in privation, so removing the goodness that they normally would expect from the Nile. And then here really in the overabundance. And so kind of taking and attacking kind of both sides of that to show Egypt and Pharaoh their powerlessness in this. As it talks about the frogs and how they are going to be come up onto the land, notice there is a progression in personal closeness to the people. So it first says they'll be coming to their houses, and then to their bedrooms, and then onto their beds. And so there's kind of this, they're getting closer and closer and invading all personal space. There are 7 different locations mentioned here, and then in the next verse there's 3 different groups of people that they are going to be coming and affecting as well. And so there's kind of this continuing describing the extent of this plague, which shows that there's really going to be no exclusions. Everybody is going to be affected by this. In verse 5, we're told about how, again, Aaron is to stretch out his hand. And notice that we have some of these same locations that were mentioned in the first plague mentioned again. So over the rivers, the streams, the pools. And so we have a fair amount of repetitiveness through this. And as I mentioned, there's kind of this structure that we have through these as well. As they do this, again, in verse 6 is really kind of pointing out in that it's repeating that, like, they're going to do this, they actually do it, is pointing out how Aaron specifically here is being obedient in what he is doing. And obviously the obedience of both Moses and Aaron is emphasized throughout this account as well. Also, with this plague, we really have a contrast between the water and the land. And so there's kind of various aspects that these plagues are coming against in the Egyptian life. So what we have then happening next is what we had before, is that Pharaoh calls the magicians again to have them duplicate this, and they are able to do that. So really, we again have Satan here being a copycat and not really doing anything new. Notice, though, as it's talking about the magicians, that they have less power in what they're doing, because it says that they're having to do this through an instrument. So they're doing it through their secret arts, whereas Moses and Aaron are really bringing about these plagues directly. And so that would be another thing that was indicate how they are less capable than what God is doing through Moses and Aaron. So despite this, though, we have a little bit of a change here in Pharaoh. Even though his magicians can do this, Pharaoh needs the Lord to remove this plague from him. And so he actually calls to Moses and Aaron and wants them to entreat the Lord to remove the plague from them. So this is only the second plague, and Pharaoh is, in some sense, caving already. So Pharaoh doesn't acknowledge the Lord. He said that earlier. But he wants Moses to entreat God on his behalf. It's also interesting to note here that Pharaoh does seem to care about his people. He's not just saying, remove these from me, but he's also concerned that they be removed from his people as well. In this too, I think there's a little bit of a hint of what we had when God was initially talking to Moses in chapter 4 about the my people for your people thing. And so Pharaoh seems to sort of be making that sort of bargain here. And I think that's probably a little bit of a foreshadowing of what ultimately will be happening. Notice Moses' response in verse 9. And remember that Moses was brought up in Pharaoh's court. And so this, what he says and how he says it, I think really is showing some courtly politeness phrasing to it, and kind of giving perhaps Pharaoh the feeling that he's still in control. But I think ultimately what it's doing is actually putting the ball back in Pharaoh's court and saying, how desperate are you? Do you want this removed now? Like, do you think you can put up with this for a week? And so this is kind of, again, trying to, I think, get Pharaoh to think a little bit about who he is, who God is, and what he needs to do in light of God's command. So Pharaoh goes and says, tomorrow. And some of the things I was reading was saying that tomorrow may not necessarily be saying that Pharaoh is willing to deal with this for a day, but it may be saying, well, when you go to pray to your God, I think it may take enough prayer that it's going to be by tomorrow, by the time this is able to be accomplished. So there's not necessarily forcibly this idea of he's willing to put up with it for a day. But still, I think Pharaoh is, he's more concerned than he was about the previous plague, but I think there's still some amount of unconcern in Pharaoh. Notice, too, in this verse that the removal of this plague is going to be showing Pharaoh about the Lord, and really answered prayer itself is revealing things about the Lord as well. So as this happens, in verse 11, we have four categories here mentioned, and some of these were mentioned previously. So we have them departing from you, your houses, your servants, and your people. And so as this happens, really the normal order of things is going to be returning. The frogs aren't going to be over the land as they've been during this plague, but things will go back to normal. So then we have Moses going out and being an intercessor as he is elsewhere in Exodus and other books of the Pentateuch. And notice that Moses is willing even to intercede for a pagan king. And that's not something that is unfamiliar from Genesis. Abraham did that as well. And so that's an important thing for us to remember as Christians as well, because I think that's not something dissimilar from what we need to do either. And then we see, kind of as is said about in James 5, about Elisha's prayer, that Moses' prayer also was effective, and this plague is removed. However, this could almost be seen as, you know, plague 2 part B, in that they just die. They don't just disappear, and so they kind of have to deal with the dead frogs and what to do with them. Notice that it mentions that there are heaps of them. This is the same word as the measurement Homer. And so there's just, you know, buckets of frogs, I guess. And it actually says heaps. And so there's a lot of them. And they're doing the best that they can to get them out of the way, at least. And then notice that it says that the land is foul, which is also something that was said about the Nile as well. And so these things are bringing about kind of a disgusting thing in the land. However, what we have in verse 15, though, is that when relief comes, Pharaoh, again, doesn't want to be obligated to the Lord. And so, really, he's still continuing to seek his own way and not be needing to be obedient to the Lord. And really, he doesn't want consequences for his actions either. Okay, so then we have the third plague that comes. And many of the plagues are associated with Moses and Aaron stretching out their staff, and so we have that here as well, which also reminds God said he was going to stretch out his hand. And so I think some of this is actually symbolic, representing the imagery that God had said that he was doing as well. So we had kind of these first plagues related to water. Now this is talking about the dust of the earth, and so it's related to the land. So again, we have Moses and Aaron both being involved in this. And this plague, which is a little bit different from the other ones, has more of a direct effect on humans. Not that the frogs weren't underfoot and such. But these gnats are actually, it says, coming on man and beast. And so this is a little bit different in that. Also notice the word all here. So all the dust of the earth became gnats. So again, this throughout these plagues is kind of really expressing the great extent that these are happening on the land. Once again, we have the magicians being called up, and they are trying to do their replication trick again, and they fail. And so they aren't able to do this. And other than a reference to them in chapter 9, verse 11, we don't hear from them again. And so they kind of just fade away after this. Also notice here in verse 18, the end of the verse, so there were gnats on man and beast. And so because they couldn't do anything about it, the plague remained. And so that's really emphasizing again that nothing can be done about this situation. They refer to this as being the finger of God. And so we also have other places in Scripture that refer to God's hand or God's arm. One interesting thing here in Exodus even is that it talks about the tablets were actually written with the finger of God in Exodus 31. And kind of really here with the magicians, they're showing a little bit more wisdom than Pharaoh even. And they are acknowledging God's involvement here. And Pharaoh didn't really want to hear this. And so again, we have him hardening his heart, and there's no call for relief here, although he had just previously done that with the situation with the frogs. So now we have the plague number four, swarms of flies. So again, we have the Moses going to Pharaoh in the morning. And we again have the appeal or command to him to let the people go. And so Pharaoh continues not to heed this, but God continues to have this be spoken to Pharaoh through Moses and Aaron. So again, it's connected to their service. So freedom is needed for service, and that's kind of similar to us as well. We had to be freed from sin in order to serve God in holiness. And again, with this plague, we have a warning given in verse 21. And so again, I think there was an opportunity for Pharaoh to turn from his ways. The word that's translated swarms of flies is really just the word that means swarms. And so there's kind of a little bit of guessing that these are some sort of flies or insects or something. And these are sent on four groups. So notice we have Pharaoh, on his servants, on his people, and also their houses. And these are some of the same groups that were mentioned on the frogs as well. And also notice that it says that the flies would fill the houses and also be on the ground, kind of, I suppose, as the frogs were as well. But with this plague, there's going to be a distinction, as we see in verse 22. So God is going to set apart or treat with distinction his people. And for this to be meaningful, I think it means that for the previous plagues, that there wasn't a distinction. So I think there's some debate about what people think about that. But I think that it's said here would mean that it was not the case previously. And in doing this, there's a different demonstration of God's power, as opposed to him applying a plague across the board, which would be the easier thing, kind of, to only apply it in parts of things would require more power to do that. And so God, in limiting the scope of what is afflicted, is showing more of himself and his power in this. The land of Goshen is mentioned, which is something we know from Genesis and the account of Joseph, and that's where they, when they went down to Egypt, that's the part of the land that they were given. And there's a distinction made here between God talking about my people and then also the Pharaoh and his people. And so setting apart Israel is also going to be showing God to Pharaoh as he does this. It says that there's going to be a division made. This word for division could also mean ransom. And then it is said that this will happen tomorrow, which is also the word that Pharaoh had used. And so there might be a little bit of irony in that, perhaps. Okay, so then we kind of move into things actually happening. And so then the Lord did so. So this is something that God is doing without Moses and Aaron. He is doing this directly. And it talks about this coming on Pharaoh and his servants. And so this is the same order that was mentioned in verse 21. So what happens then is that Pharaoh again calls for Moses and Aaron and tells them that they can go sacrifice in the land. So this is the first promise of release. But there is a restriction that is placed on that. So remember from back in Genesis that when we have Joseph and his brothers coming into Egypt, that the Egyptians didn't want to eat with the Hebrews. And so I think some of that comes into play here with the sacrifices in the land. So remember that the Egyptians didn't care for shepherds. And so I think that potentially relates to the sheep as well. And I think that might be what the abomination here is referring to the sheep. Here we have also the first reference to stoning, which is the potential response of the Egyptians in if the Israelites had done this. So instead of doing this in land, Moses says that they should actually not do it here, but they should go into the wilderness. And really, Pharaoh shouldn't be trying to change what God had already commanded, which is that they should go into the wilderness to worship God. So Pharaoh, I think, is kind of in a hard place because he wants to keep the people, but he wants to keep them under bondage. And so there's kind of this conflicting thing that he is doing. But we see in verse 28 that he does ask for Moses to make supplication for him again. Okay, so kind of as we conclude here, we see that Moses is going to go out and pray, but he does offer a warning to Pharaoh that he shouldn't be dealing deceitfully. He shouldn't be mocking in the way he is dealing with things. But Moses is still willing to pray for him, even though he has been behaving this way. And so we have God doing what Moses asked. So God has his plans and his will, but he is also pleased in a mysterious way to actually use our prayers in bringing that about. And so answered prayer is not really due to our goodness or efficacy, but that is something that God is doing. It made me think in 1 Timothy 2, talks about how we as Christians are also to be offering prayers, petitions, intercessions for all people and even for kings and those in authority. Okay, so instead of what happened for the frogs, we have something different here, and they are all just taken away instead of the frogs where they just died. But we also, at the end, we're starting to get this pattern that's happening. But Pharaoh hardened his heart this time also. And so this is something that will be continuing through these other plagues as well. Okay, so just as a summary, I also thought I'd mention briefly kind of how this is used in the New Testament a little bit. So in Romans 9, while the Exodus is a great picture of God's work of salvation, it's also a picture, especially with Pharaoh, in relation to his election. So Romans 9:14 and following says, "What shall we say then? There is no injustice with God, is there? May it never be. For he says to Moses, I will have mercy on whom I have mercy, and I will have compassion on whom I have compassion. So then it does not depend on the man who wills or the man who runs, but on God who has mercy. For the scripture says to Pharaoh, for this very purpose I raise you up, to demonstrate my power in you, and that my name might be proclaimed throughout the whole earth. So then he has mercy on whom he desires, and he hardens whom he desires." So just a couple things. Overall, we can see a number of times where the Lord's servants are mentioned as being obedient and faithful, and so that's something that's important for us as well. Again, another thing that's emphasized is what God says will happen happens, and so that is something that we can see of God's faithfulness, and then that's why also we are to be faithful as well. All that God does reveals himself, and so the judgments, his mercies, all these things are revealing more of him to us. And then also, especially through some of these difficulties, we see that God is providing for his servants in these. Okay, let's go ahead and pray. Dear God, we thank you for your power, your might, your love, all that you do. We thank you for the things that we see here in you working to rescue your people through judgments, through wonders, and also your mercy and love, not only for your people, but your patience even with Pharaoh in his obstinacy against you. Pray that you would be using what we're seeing here in Exodus to grow us and increase our knowledge of you. And pray that you would be helping us to think about these things, and that you would be using these things in our life even this week. I pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.